Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is Good Humans Podcast with me, Cooper Chapman, chatting to the world's best about the inspiring stories that got them to where they are today. What's going on, you good humans? Welcome to guest episode 139 of Good Humans Podcast with the main man, Frankie Lee. Big thank you to our sponsors, Drinkarepa. These guys have been supporting the podcast for a really long time. If you're someone who likes to take care of your brain and is super conscious about different things to look after your health, then I suggest you go check out drinkarepa.com. Learn all about the science behind this neuroscience beverage. All natural ingredients, black currant flavored juice that has these other ingredients like L-theanine and pine bark extract, which make your brain perform better short term and have good benefits for your long term brain health. Head over to that website, drinkarepa.com, use the code GOODHUMAN, big 25% off everything over on their site, and you can learn all about the science over there. You can also check it out in Coles and Woolies, grab one, and yeah, let me know what you think. Would love to hear what your experience is like with it. Also, if you want to learn more about the Good Human Factory, the mental health workshops I've been running for big corporate groups like Apple, McDonald's, Telstra, Red Bull, Amazon, plus many, many more, all kinds of industries can benefit from a nice mental health workshop. So if you want to learn more about that and get an info pack, head over to thegoodhumanfactory.com, click on the workshops tab, and you can find all about that. Also, use the code podcast over on thegoodhumanfactory.com, pick up some of our merch. The men's stuff is getting very close to sold out, so if you're thinking about getting some, go check out if there's anything left in your size. Still quite a few women's things left, so go check that out as well. It'd be super appreciative. Okay, today's episode, Frankie Lee, far out. I've been watching this guy's podcast clips and also episodes of his podcast for the last year or two, and he's just fascinating. Such a expert in the field of educational content, but also just has so much knowledge to share. He's been through quite the journey in life where he's gathered all of this knowledge, and we talked all about it. He grew up over in the UK and yeah, had a pretty nice upbringing, but then found himself over in Australia after a few setbacks and a few challenges like we all go through. He was like, you know what, I need to go make it over in Australia. And yeah, that he did. He was a shop fitter, he was a boxing coach, and then he worked in sales because he realized, you know what, that's how I'm going to get ahead in life financially, is to learn how to sell stuff. And from there, he had a crazy idea and opportunity and started a thing called Content Removal, where contentremoval.com, where he gets rid of content online for celebrities and high profile people. And yeah, he's absolutely killed it with that. But then he started the Frankie Lee podcast because he wanted to share his knowledge with people. And now it's one of the biggest podcasts in the world. And it's just incredible, the people he gets on, the conversations he has, and there's so much knowledge that he has to share, which he shares plenty of in this episode. If you enjoyed the episode, do me a huge favor, share on your social media, tag both myself and Frankie Lee. You can find both of us in the show notes. Also, go hit that like and subscribe button. It takes not long at all, but it really helps us move up the rankings. And yeah, best thing you can ever do is just tell a friend about the podcast. If you got some value out of it, I'm sure your friends will as well. Let's jump into it. Welcome to Good Humans Podcast, Frankie Lee.
How you going, my man?
Mate, I'm good, mate. I'm not as dashing and as good looking as you, but I'm trying. Do you know what I mean? I'm having a good day. So yeah, mate. How are you?
I'm very good. It's a bit later for me, 7 p.m. I usually actually switch off screen time at 7 p.m. But when you were like, "Can you do this time?" I was like, "Absolutely, I can for you," because you're over in the UK right now.
I'm in the UK right now on a little bit of a detour on the podcast. I've been podcasting in Dubai and Miami and LA, and I'm just having a little bit of a stopgap before I properly kick off again in February. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's so important to have that rest. I've done two episodes a week and edited all of them myself for the last 2 years, and I took my first 2 weeks off over this period. Far out, it was so needed. It was so needed.
There's more to a podcast than what people ever conceptualize and consider when they start one. And to get it to the level that you dream of, there's 10,000 more hours of work than what anyone will ever see. And you know the game, mate. You know the game. It's like, it's one of these things, like it's an iceberg. A podcast is an iceberg. people see the peak. People might see when you start popping up, but before there's a big base below it that you have to build. A lot of reps you have to do to even be able to converse with people the way that you're doing. So credit to yourself, mate, for doing that many episodes.
No, it's been fun. I mean, it's been a cool journey. I'm like getting close to that million download mark, which I'm sure you can tell me all about the day you hit your first million downloads. It's going to be a special one. But man, I'm really excited to get to know your story. And we're going to catch back up to the podcast because that's what you're doing now. But the question I do always open Good Humans podcast with is, what are you grateful for in your life right now, today?
I'm literally grateful for even just, you know, being able to do what I love. You know, being able to do what I love, being surrounded by, you know, having a good base, a family base around me. I'm just grateful for like how life is. Well, I believe in this statement: all of life comes to me with ease, joy, and glory. You know, and all of life flows to me with ease, joy, and glory is an even better one. But I just believe that in every area of my life, like whatever's meant for you won't pass you by. And I'm just grateful to be here and to be doing what I love and to be finally putting out a voice to the world that I believe can actually help people move forward rather than, you know, just, you know, we can all make entertaining content online. We can all do this, that, and the other, but I just believe I'm making something that actually impacts people's lives and actually moves them forward and shifts their perspective in what they're in. So I'm just grateful to be able to do that whilst I'm here, whilst I'm on the planet. You know what I'm saying?
Mate, it's so special. It's like you've learned about service early enough in your life. So many people kind of get to their later part of life or make all this money and then go to service. But it sounds like you're so dialed in with, yeah, trying to give back. And so much of your content, which I've consumed and been super inspired by over the years, you just never know the impact that some of the words that you share, some of the content that you create can have on people. And your stuff is seen by millions. So, dude, you should be super proud. And it's amazing that that's something you're grateful for.
Mate, you say so, like some episodes, you're right, they are seen by millions of people and hundreds of thousands of people, but some episodes aren't as well. You know, like you get ups and your downs, and you're as only as good as the reps you did 3 months ago, essentially. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So like you never mm-hmm. What I want people to understand from this podcast is you never arrive at a destination. Your whole life is this one long journey, and then you turn off the road and then you come back onto the road, and then you're off down this dirt track, and then next thing you know you're back on the road, and then you have to step three steps back, and like there's no predetermined path, and the beauty of life is this: that every one of us that any one of you that's listening to this podcast, none of your journeys are going to be the same. They're all going to be inherently different. Mine has been up, down, left, right, backwards, breakups, this, that, the other, you know, having to work a job up, you know, go, you know, sending myself broke at certain points in time, like struggling to eat, like all these things that no one sees. And that is what I call like the beautiful pain of pursuit. And you get the opportunity every day to have the beautiful pain of pursuit. And yes, some people won't know what that is, and some people won't resonate with it because they don't exactly know your story. But just know that your story couldn't have been written any other way. Otherwise, it would have been.
Yeah, I like to look at it, think of my life like a book. It's like, you're not going to just skip to the end of the book and read the end of it. It'd be a pretty boring book. You got to read your way through the chapters. That's like life. There's going to be chapters with the excitement where things are going your way. There's going to be the chapters that create the drama that make the next thing better. That's why I like to no matter what, you're just going to keep going through new chapters in life until you get to that final chapter.
Well, with actual books, I always do read the end because I like to know where they're taking me to. Because if I don't like where the book's taking me, I'm not going to read the book, because otherwise they're wasting my time, and my time's I value it. So it's like I can't afford to waste 2 hours reading a book if the end destination is not even the one I want to visit.
What about if the book? Yeah, it does, but that makes sense in my mind. If it's like a book that involves a journey of some sort, if it's a self-development book or something that has different chapters that have different studies of research, if you just go to the last chapter, you might miss some good stuff.
No, because in the last chapter, the author summarizes his thesis. So for argument's sake, Atomic Habits, if you were going to read that and you'd never read it, if you read the summary, James Clear summarizes his thesis as to his whole conceptual in the last chapter. So you can read the summary of what he's condensed. So basically he just takes the whole book and then he goes summarize, boom. See, what people don't realize is that, in all these publishing houses, the every, have you noticed how every book has to hit like 200 to 250 pages? Every book is that long, essentially. That's because they need to hit that quota to be able to publish it. So some of them have had a lot taken out. Some of them have got a lot of filler in them as well. So there's a lot of books with so much. Yeah, I'm conscious of how much filler is in it. So there's so many books that you can read two or three chapters of, get the concept, and then implement it in your life rather than, you know, just reading on and on and on and on. Because basically what happens is they present the idea. Habits are a good thing to form, right? Let's just look at James Clear. He presents the idea. Habits are a good thing to form. Then he presents you with research to back the idea, example to back the idea, example. The summary is habits are a good idea because of this reason. Now you can implement them in your life in this way. That's what I mean. You can literally save yourself a hell of a lot of time if you know how to read.
How to take the concepts on. Yeah. I'm going to have to try that out with my next book. I've got plenty that I need to read, so maybe that'll help me get through them a little bit quicker. But far out, we're going to go through so many topics today, I know, but I want to get to know your story a little bit because, like you said, there's plenty of ups and downs, and I do Good Humans podcast a little different to a lot. I like to go on a bit of a chronological journey because I feel like people can relate to different parts of people's stories. Right now, someone might not be able to relate to someone with a big podcast, an amazing business that's thriving, but they might be able to relate to the part of you where you were a boxing coach and felt like you were not where you wanted to be with your identity. I've done a bit of research and know quite a bit of your story. So I want to go back to the start. What do I need to know about your childhood, your upbringing until high school that might give me a bit of an understanding as a youngster?
Yeah, I was brought up in like, in England, we have a class system, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not like that in Australia, and I'm sure we'll touch on that about my experience in Australia, but we definitely have a class system in England, and whatever class you're born into, it kind of predetermines what you're going to do in life. So if you're born on one of the council estates in the UK, you know, you're born into this environment that is hard. You're fighting on the street. There's drugs. There's insecurity, there's broken homes and all this, that and the other. If you're born into the higher class in the UK, you're born somewhere like Chelsea, Kensington, Essex, you've got money, you've got cash, your family buy you a Range Rover for your first car. And if you're born into the middle class like I was, the dream is to have the 3-bedroom house, the BMW Mercedes on the driveway, to live that suburban life, to have a job that pays you 35 to 40,000 pounds a year, to have a pension. And that's kind of what you're taught by the school and the system that you're in. But it just so happened that my sister was quite IQ level intelligent girl. She got into a good school in Peterborough, and I was surrounded by a lot of wealthy kids in secondary school, so to speak. And I kind of realized that there's more to life than just operating at the kind of level that I was predetermined to operate at. So when I left school, I didn't have the grades to stay on, do sixth form and all this kind of stuff that we do in the UK. So I stepped into carpentry and joinery and became a carpenter and joiner, but knowing full well that eventually I was learning the trade to have my own business, to step out, to do more, to be more, to all this kind of stuff, you know? So obviously I blasted through my advanced craft, because when I was a child, just stepping back into that childhood, my dad, because I was over a hyperactive kid and all this and the other, he would teach me carpentry in the garage like 3 or 4 days a week, you know, to keep my mind occupied, to teach me. So when I came to that apprenticeship at 16 years old now, I blasted through it as a carpenter because I knew how to do dovetail joints. I knew all this stuff because my dad had been teaching me like carpentry, cabinet making since I was a child. So it's like all that childhood there, that mix in. I went through a school life where I got in a lot of trouble, not bad trouble like, you know, doing drugs or, you know, all this other stuff that people do these days.
Just
but
playing up at school a bit.
Just trying to get people's, like, people had a predetermined like estimation of where I was going to end up and what I was going to be doing, and I didn't like that. They were setting me in a box from day one. I remember day one of school, for argument's sake, and I walk in, and it's a school where everyone's like an a B and A plus student at that school. It's just one of these prestigious schools that you go to, and it's just like they're the people. But I wasn't there. I got in on the sibling ruling, so my sister's there, she's talented and this, that and the other. So I'm there, and I remember the first day, mate. There's 200-300 kids starting this year seven in this English school. It's one of the best schools in Peterborough where I'm from. And I walk in there, and at the start, imagine this. This is what put the monkey on my back to do what I've done in life. The head of the year stood at the front of the school there and said, here's the list of learning support children that need to go stand over there, right? And there was me, this lad called Kamal Danji, and there was like three other kids on this list. And the only reason we were classed as learning support is because we were C-level students. Now imagine that, a C-level student at every other school in this country would have been in set two, set one, and added value to. But because of that, I was segregated straight away in this school. And imagine that. So you're segregated in front of all these people. So instantly, day one, these other kids have got this impression that you're thick, that you're not worthy, something like that. So all my school life of secondary school was I spent being the joker. I was never like bullied or anything like that, but I had to earn my respect back in the school because I lost it on day one when these guys put me in a frame that wasn't my frame. Mm-hmm. So I thank myself every day for that day, because that day changed the rest of my fucking life, because I realized that I already had it. I already had the drive. I already knew what I was going to do. I already knew exactly what I was on the planet for, in terms of like, I knew I was here for a bigger purpose than what I was doing. But mate, that lights a fire under your ass when someone says to you, when someone basically says to you, hey mate, I've never met you before, but I'm putting you in a box. And this box that I'm putting you in is a box that I've predetermined, mate, makes you look like an asshole to everyone else. So I'm going to put you there and you're going to sit in it. It's up to you now whether you sit in that box and or move through life. Now, how I want to relate it to your audience listening to this is simply this, right? There is a box in your life that you've been put in at some point. Someone's put you there that you shouldn't have been in. Mm-hmm. Now, it's up to you to break out of that box and step out of it. And some people have gone their whole life, Cooper, and they've never stepped out of the box they've been put in. I'm trying to give, with that story, I want to give people permission today for whatever box, whether you're put in a box by a parent, whether you're put in a box by society or this, that, and the other, to step out of it, because it's from stepping out of it that you can go and achieve great things.
I love that. It's just all about just unlearning some of the self-beliefs that we learn. I love the stuff that Dr. Nicole LaPera, who does the holistic psychologist in LA, she's amazing. And she talks about like, you're not your thoughts, but then you're also not your self-beliefs. And I'm actually reading this book at the moment called The Celestine Prophecy. It's really fascinating. I don't know if you've heard about it. Anyway, you'll have to read the last chapter. It's really interesting. It's talking about the fact of unlearning the way that your parents treat you, kind of like the way that you were talking about your school putting you in the box. Your parents treat you in a certain way, and there's all these different sort of chronotypes that we all fall into. And once you can learn yours, you can also unlearn it and take yourself out of that box.
Yeah, bro. My mum's a classic one for trying to bring me back into her reality, even though I don't live that reality. Do you know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
When you're out there and you're swinging for the fences, so like I've gone from carpenter that's earning £25,000 in England, and we'll go through the journey, but I end up in Australia, and then I end up with the kind of company that I build and everything that I do, I end up being able to do £100,000 in a day. When I was in the kitchen in England, bro, and I signed £100,000 deal in a day and got the cash in the bank, my mum's thinking I'm selling drugs. She's thinking I'm like, I've just added value to the marketplace and they've paid me proportionately to what I'm worth. And she's like, but other people are earning £25,000 a year. Like, I'm like, yeah, but that, I'm not other people. Like, do you see what I'm saying? So
I feel exactly the same, my man. When I'm building my thing, I've had my mum be like, you should be working doing this to get you like $20 an hour. I'm like, it doesn't make any sense in my head to do that. It isn't my reality. I'm like, now that I can earn $5,000 an hour to go and speak on a stage, how could you ever go back to the $25 an hour when you realize there's more reality out there? It's interesting from your parents.
Well, you get paid proportionately to the value that you bring to the world. But exactly. Most people are taught, and you're conditioned at school and in your childhood, you're conditioned to swap your time for money. Mm-hmm. Swapping time for money is a shit exchange. Swapping your value for money, that's different. Mm-hmm. You know, so I've worked my whole life ever since I came to Australia in 2014. I worked tirelessly to learn how to bring more value to more people, to the marketplace, so that I could clip the ticket. And I'm not talking about clipping the ticket obnoxiously. I'm talking about, look, if I've brought you $1 million worth of value, then I can charge $100,000. If I've brought you $10 million worth of value, then I can charge more money, can't I? So it's like, this whole psychology of thought to me, it has just been, my mind was blown open, mate, as soon as I got to Australia. I mean, Australia, yeah. I can't tell you how much, I mean, I've got a passport and everything in Australia now, but I can't tell you how much and how grateful and the people. I love the people. I love the country. I love the abundance of the place. I mean, Australia, bro, I've been all around the world, bro. Australia is the most elite country in the world.
Like, and the Gold Coast too, in particular, is just like, oh, I'm lucky. I've spent many times around the world, and you come back here and it's just like, not many places like it. Nowhere like it.
No place like it.
Yeah, well, we're going to catch up to your part of the story where you get to Australia, but there's a chapter or probably a few chapters before we get there. So I just want to not rush through, but let's go carpentry and boxing, how you found yourself.
Carpentry, boxing and Australia are all involved in the same kind of timeline, really. So I think you'll kind of wrap it up for people. I'm 35 now. Okay. I know I've had a hard life, bro.
It fascinates me. Yeah, so let's talk about that journey from carpentry boxing to Australia. Because Australia is almost 10 years ago. So yeah, up to probably 4 years of boxing and then Australia. Tell me how you got here.
So I'll take you back. So the years like 2011, 2012. In 2011, I'd figured, right, I'm working on a building site, swapping my time for carpentry. I was doing English heritage work. I was earning £11.50 an hour at the time, which is the minimum wage now in England right now, for doing highly intricate work. And I thought to myself, right, I need to find a way in this carpentry thing to earn money. But I didn't have enough experience to go out and start my own business. And I didn't really want to start a business in carpentry anyway. So I saw this opportunity to go and teach carpentry to prisoners, right? So I apply to teach carpentry to prisoners and I get this job. And I thought that I would be teaching men carpentry in prison. But it turns out that I'm teaching women in prison carpentry. So I end up in this female prison. I'm now this carpentry teacher, and I'm expecting the first day to have this shop full of like these old spinsters that have done this, that, and the other, and all this old. But because all the people had seen, like, there was this young guy coming in to teach carpentry. My carpentry workshop was, like, filled with, like, you know, stripper that's been arrested for spitting at a copper and all this, like, it was crazy, right? So the biggest thing in psychology I've ever learned is being locked in a room for a year with, like, 12, 15 women with tools in their hands that have been told by society that they've got to be locked up, but yet in that same breath they've got a saw, they've got a chisel, and I'm teaching all these women how to do carpentry, and I just learned the whole psychology piece of how you manipulate, how the world will manipulate them, how the world will manipulate you, what you got to watch out for, this, that, and the other. So I learned all this psychology piece from there, and also allowed myself to get more money. And then I realized, being locked up in a, I'm basically being paid 35 grand a year at this point to be locked in a room full of women, which sounds fucking great to a lot of people. But to me, it was like, I'm spending half my year in prison now. So that didn't sit well with me, because now I'm conditioning myself to be a prisoner because I'm putting myself in the predicament, right? You are what you condition yourself to be. Mm-hmm. And I thought, right, that's, I don't want to be around criminality, because I can only rise to the level of my surroundings. Mm-hmm. So I thought, right, I saw this other job teaching carpentry, and it just so happened to be at one of the most prestigious carpentry colleges in the country. So I took this job, and this was £35 an hour now. So I've gone from like £20 an hour or whatever to now £35 an hour. So I'm stacking this. I'm trying to put this cash away. I'm trying to do this, that, and the other. And then I taught in that college for a little bit, and I thought, you know what? This is not it either. Like, there's got to be more to life. So this is where the step back comes in. I realize I've stepped along this path that I shouldn't be treading. I'm now at the top of the game in my thing, but there's nothing beyond this level. You know, I'm not going to be this guy that's going to run this college. I've got more in me than that. So the step back to me was to go back on the carpentry tools. But the thing was, I step back on, I go back into carpentry. It's now 2013. It's now September, right? It's starting to get colder in England. I'm working on this church in the middle of this field, putting this new roof on. It's been affected by fire. It's all that kind of work. It's intricate work, but, you know, it's kind of like, it's cold. We get to December, and it's, I'm talking now, it's minus 15 with a wind chill factor in England, the coldest winter in history. And on Christmas Eve, I'm there sheeting this roof down on this church to protect it. And my hands are curved over, they're bleeding. It's just like, and I thought to myself, fuck this. I'm going to just do what I said I'm going to do. And I'm going to go and, I've seen this Bondi Rescue. I've seen Holly Valance in Neighbours. I've seen all this Australian stuff going on. I want that, because I'm telling you now, if it's anything like that, unbelievable, I'm going to do that. So I booked myself this on Christmas, around about Christmas time, I booked this one-way Malaysian Airways flight to Australia, right? I get my visa. It's granted in 24 hours. And I've booked it for I think it was July 14th. The flight was July 14th in 2014, right? So let's fast forward 6 months. I've been working four jobs. I've been working on the tools as a carpenter to save money. I'm working as a doorman to stack cash to save money. So I'm getting people trying to fight me in clubs and trying to hit me around the head with bottles and all this kind of shit. For £10 an hour extra, then I'm training fighters and working with one-to-one clients with boxing as my boxing training stuff, and we'll step into that because I was in the pursuit of being a professional boxing trainer and trying to get to elite level in that. And then also at the weekends, I was going out with my bricklayer friend, and we were working together, and we were stacking cash and just working private jobs and all that stuff. So we stack all this cash. I said to my bricklayer mate, why don't you come with me? He came with me initially to Australia, but only stayed there like 2 or 3 months and then went home. But let's just go back to the flight. Even the flight over to Australia was crazy. It's like we book on this Philippine Airlines. It wasn't Malaysian Airlines, it was Philippine Airlines. And the stop off is in Manila, right? And I don't know if any of you have ever been to Manila, but it's a horrible, it's a horrible airport, a horrible place. The airport was like a shed.
So we had my biggest ever surf competition win in Cloud 9 in the Philippines.
Mate, you got to do it. We even on the flight over, I knew my life in Australia was going to change me forever, because back in 2014, there was a typhoon or tropical storm that hit Manila Airport whilst I was in Manila Airport. And when we took off into a typhoon, right? And it killed 50 people at that airport that day, right? And we took off and our plane took damage, right? So we've flown off and our planes took damage. So we have to, I'm meant to be going to Brisbane. We had to make an emergency landing in Darwin Airport. So imagine, I've never seen Australia. I've got Holly Valance in my head over here, as this every woman looks like Holly Valance. I've got this epitome of Bondi Beach, and now I'm landing in Darwin, my first ever time in Australia, bro. Everyone looked like Crocodile Dundee. It was just, everyone was wearing khaki. I turned to my mate and I said, fucking hell, like this, I think I've made a mistake here. Do you know what I mean? Like this isn't what I was thinking it was going to be. But when we got off the plane, because we made this landing in Darwin Airport, we get off the plane and we look back, and there's fucking like literally like damage on the plane, bro. Like little holes, like where some branches have hit it and some other stuff. I'm like, this is fucking ridiculous. Like, we've limped this plane to Darwin, right? So we stay there for a couple of hours. Then we fly on to Brisbane. I arrive in Brisbane. I think to myself, oh, fuck this. Like, Brisbane, you got to remember Brisbane now is not the Brisbane 10 years, like 8-9 years ago. It was like a small country town back 10 years ago. So you land there. I thought to myself, again, I've made a mistake. But what happened from there was I moved then to the Gold Coast, and bro, like my life just, I remember the first day being on the Gold Coast. I walked out onto the beach and I just sat there. And I was welling up in tears, bro, because you got to understand that I've spent all my life living in the cold, living in the wet, living till 26 years old in the miserable weather, miserable conditions. Like, the people aren't exactly the most happiest at all times of the year here. And I'm like, fuck me, I'm sat on that beach, bro. And I just took my heart, my soul, everything, like, all in one move. And that was my kickoff. That was how carpentry intersected in Australia. And yeah, that was it, bro. Yes, that was the second day my life really changed, I'll tell you.
Dude, that is a sick story, and you told that so amazingly. I'm sure you've told that many times, but that was I haven't told it in that much detail, bro, that was fun. That's such a crazy story, man. And wow, that's incredible. But here you are, Australia for 9 years. So I'm excited now to hear what it took once you got to Australia to assimilate. As well, I mean, the Good Humour Factory, the work that I do is all around mental health. I don't know how much you want to go into it, but you seem so driven. Have you had moments where you've doubted yourself, or is there just like, yeah, how did you get this bulletproof mindset? Do you think it comes through the boxing training that maybe we'll talk into this chapter now? But I just know so many people will be listening to you going like, but you know, there's that victim mindset that so many of us fall into. And it sounds like, and we, I feel like anyone who even isn't at all in a victim mindset has moments in their mind where they go there for a second and then come back out of it. How do you find yourself with such a clear vision, such a clear purpose?
So it wasn't always like that. You know, my vision was clear from the moment that thing happened to me in school. And then when I got to Australia, what I found was, like, I wanted this beautiful life for myself, but you find there's lots of things that trigger you. Like, are you worthy enough for this life you're living? Like, you know, it was so much going on in my head, Cooper. Like, you don't understand. Like, so I'll give you an example, bro. Like, when I came to Australia, I really want the audience to understand what I came with, because if they understand that, then they can understand how far this actually has come. I arrived in Australia with $6,000, a bag of clothes, a set of boxing gloves, and a pair of boxing boots, right? Now, you imagine when you arrive in the Gold Coast, you've got the most beautiful array of women in the Gold Coast, but a lot of them come from like wealthy families. A lot of them have got money. I saw girls like 18 years old when I arrived. Bearing in mind, I'm 26 at this point, 18 years old, driving like Range Rovers and this and that, and I was like, this blows my fucking mind. Like, I've just got $4,000 left in the bank after I've bought food and paid rent. Like, what the fuck? Like, this is crazy to me. And there was a lot to overcome with that, because I'd gone from, like, you know, a decent level of living in the UK, but like very standardized, to like opulence, abundance, you know, sun, sea, sand, beautiful women, beautiful cars, beautiful, everything was beautiful, and everyone had more than me, bro. And it was like, I just felt like, fuck, like, see, I felt gutted that I felt like I'd wasted 26 years of my life. I don't feel like that now, because I realized that the grounding and all the punches that I've taken over the years to get to this point is what's been worth it to me. And to, you know, to have that English lifestyle and that harder upbringing, I think, has done me some good. But, you know, when you first get there and you kind of see the opulence and the abundance and everything that a young Australian has compared to a young English guy, I'm like, holy fuck, this is just unbelievable, bro. And it was a lot to, it was a lot to overcome. I remember... I was just to say, Cooper, I remember being there on the... I remember sat there on the beach after a week, and I just sat there and I decided I was going to live there. I decided, right, this is it. I'm putting my stake in the ground. I'm going to live here. I don't know how I'm going to live here. I don't know how I'm going to get a visa here. I'm on this tourist working visa. I don't know what I've got to do to get moving on here, but I'm staying here. That was it. Week one. Stake in the ground. Figure it out.
And I love it. And the way that you said that then, I think because majority of my audience is Australia, I think about 70% of my audience is Australian. I think a beautiful way, the way that you said, like, you get so much more here in Australia, it's not necessarily monetary more, because there's obviously plenty of class and plenty of variety here in Australia, but just the baseline of the beauty of where we live, the temperature of where we live, the culture, there's so much that we have that is amazing. And that's, I think, hopefully everyone listening right now just can be grateful for your reflection then of what your upbringing was like compared to maybe majority of my audience here in Australia, whether even if they came from high class, low class, wherever, just being in Australia is a lottery ticket.
Bro, just, I call Australia the lucky sperm club. Do you know what I mean? If your parents are Australian, then you get conceived in Australia and you come out of that womb into this world, bro, into Australia with a fucking Australian passport. Welcome to the 26 million in the lucky sperm club, because you have just won the fucking lottery, the genetic lottery. I'm not being funny, right? It's fucking nuts. It's nuts to me.
Literally.
How you lot are just walking around like, oh, I'm an Australian. I want to go to Europe. Are you fucking for real, mate? Like, give your head a wobble. Give your head a wobble. Have a look around where you are. And unless you're in fucking Gundawindi, like, you know, you're doing all right. You know, if you, and here's the thing that most Aussies don't understand. Just move to the best parts of Australia. Move to the Gold Coast. Move to the Sunshine Coast. Move to the Perths of the world. Like wherever the best place is. But like, you know, it's abundant. It's abundant, and I love the place. And it was the best thing. It was the best thing for me. I wouldn't change it for the world.
Mate, I love that. Good on you. That's some beautiful words and probably some very viral content from that little sperm lottery. I love that.
You won the fucking lottery, you bastards. Like, what are you talking about? How can you moan about being in the lucky sperm club? I mean, seriously, come on. You were born blessed.
The second most prescribed antidepressant country in the world. How does that sit with you with the sperm lottery? Isn't that crazy stuff? Per capita.
Okay. Well, I can break that down for you because
I'd love to hear your opinion on that.
Yeah. So I don't drink, I don't smoke. And the only drugs I've ever done is a mushroom journey with Lino, who you know, and stuff like that. So I don't entertain any of that stuff. Right. But in Australia, the culture is, because you've had it so good, I feel like Australians get really bored because of how good they've had it. So they love, They take drinking to a whole new level. Like the drinking culture is like, we're gonna go to Burley Pav on a fucking Wednesday afternoon, and be there till 10, and then go to work tomorrow. And it's not even frowned upon. No one thinks anything less about it. It's this lifestyle that it's the culture of copious amounts of drinking. You're drinking something that's a depressant, that's bringing your energy, the auric energy field down. You know, your body is electricity. Electricity is what attracts everything to you. So if you want abundance, why would you bring your field in? Mm. You need to bring your field out. So like, it's all this going on. I know there's a lot of people that struggle all over the world. I know there's a lot of people that struggle in Australia. I would just ask anyone that's feeling like they're struggling or feeling like they're going uphill battle, like, Frankie, how can you say this is a lucky country? Blah, 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 blah. You get whatever you vision in life eventually. So why would you choose to think of it as a disempowering place when it could be such an empowering place to you? So like, how you reframe your mind is how you see the world. Mm-hmm. So if you want to reframe your mind from today, maybe just look at the things that aren't taking you in the direction that you want to go in, and then remove them. And I'm going to give you all a system to do this right now, because I think this will change your life. And I'm going to hang my hat on this, right? So I have this thing in my life called radical honesty. I approach all areas of my life with it. Sometimes I don't like what I'm telling myself, but it's radically honest, and I need to, if I'm honest, I can move. If I'm not honest, I can't move forward. So I like to ascertain and correlate where I'm going in my life, because I'm going in a direct direction correlated to two things: the people I'm surrounded by and the habits that I perform. Now, habits are both good and bad. People are both good and bad. So the first thing I do is I write down all the people that I've hung around within the last 30 days on this side of the page. And then I write positive and negative in two columns and I put a line down the middle on this side of the page. On this side of the page, I write down all the habits, good and bad, that I'm doing in my life. Okay, I'm drinking, I'm doing drugs, I'm also going to the gym, I'm eating well, So I write down all the habits, positive and negative. And then I write positive and negative on that side of the page. Now I've got this journal, I'm looking at it and I'm approaching it with radical honesty. And then I go like this, right. I've got this guy called Craig in my life. I see him 3 times a week. Is he positive or negative on me? Like, I just want to give you context and clarity as to why I say that. Because every experience that you have with another human being never leaves you the same. So what, me meeting Cooper today and Cooper meeting me, Cooper's going to leave this conversation with me either feeling more positive about his interaction with Frankie Lee or more negative about his interaction. I never leave Cooper the same. So if that's the truth then, which it is, and I've found it all through my life, every person on this side of the journal that you've put down here is going to leave you more positive or more negative for the experience that they've brought to your life. And it's up to you to be radically honest with what they're doing. So you tick positive or negative. Okay, now you've got a clear picture of the people you're surrounded by. Now go over to your habits. Now go through all your habits, the drinking, the drugs, the this, the that, blah, 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 blah. Positive or negative, it affects in your life. Okay, here's where you can get super clear. I'm not telling you that if drinking's come up as one of your bad habits and you're doing it 5 days a week, that you got to quit drinking. But I'm saying you can now cut it down because you know what the habit is and you're looking at it. I'm not saying that you've got to cut Craig out of your life if he's a negative influence. But if you're seeing Craig 3 times a week, maybe see him 1 time a week. Because you and then if you find that Jenna is a positive influence on your life, maybe, and you're only seeing her once a week, maybe see her 3 times a week in your life because she's positive energy to you. You add value to her, she adds value to you, you move forward. And all these on this system alone, if you actually approach it with the detail it needs to be and the radical honesty, it will change your life because you'll identify where your energy goes up, down, left, right, sideways. Mm-hmm. It'll identify all the habits that you need to cut down over a period of time, not just eliminate. Some you can just eliminate straight away. Like, do you know what I'm saying? But it really does allow you to raise your energy in all forms of yourself and transform your life.
I love it, man. It reminds me so much of just extreme ownership. I don't know if you've read Jocko Willink's book, The Navy SEAL. Incredible stuff, but it's just all about every part of our life. We have to take extreme ownership. And I love this idea of actually putting it in front of your face and having it there to do a bit of an audit of your life. And so many of us are almost fearful of doing that or don't have the time or, you know, distract ourselves. It's the age old, if like we've got 5 minutes to ourselves, what do most of us do? We go on our phone. We don't sit with stillness and try and clear out what's going on. We try and distract. So I'm sure everyone would have got something out of that beautiful little lesson you taught. I want to keep moving through the story because there's a few things I still want to get to, and I know where I'm going to get pretty close.
We've got time. If you've got time, I'll make time. It's all good. Okay. Carry on.
No, I appreciate it. Well, let's go now. You're in Australia. We've got this amazing lesson. We've won the sperm lottery. What's that first chapter look like in Australia? You've decided, you know what, I'm sitting on the beach, I'm going to be a resident here. What's the next step? What was that journey in carpentry and boxing before you got into the podcast and sales? And there's still cool steps to come here.
I took a job. So the first time I went broke in Australia was inside the first couple of months. I took a job with a tiler in Brisbane because I couldn't get a carpentry job at the time. And I went working for him for 3 weeks. And at the end of the 3 weeks, he didn't pay me. So I'm now having to ring my mum up in the UK and ask her to borrow $1,000 so that I can afford to eat. Because for like 3 or 4 days there, I just had peanut butter, bread and an apple. You know what I'm saying? So like that's the kind of level I got. I sat there on the beach in the Gold Coast, and there was like literally in tears running down my face because I thought to myself, how the fuck can a man of my ability put himself in this position? So it was a humbling experience to have to go back to my mom and say, like, do you know what, can you just send me $1,000? I'll get you back in a couple of weeks. This guy has not paid me. But it's like, you know, it's like that hurt me a lot. I'd never asked for money. You know what I'm saying? But it hurts you as a man. Like, and then you're seeing these 18 year olds driving around in this opulence, abundance and everything else. And you're sat there and like, fuck me. I just want a chance, you know what I'm saying? I just want to break free of this. And I turn that situation round. I then get this next job I get. I go on a labor hire agency and I go for $35 an hour now. And I go as a, I think I'm go, I realized that in Australia, I'd done shop fitting in the UK, but we called it shop fitting, but we didn't call ourselves a shop fitter. We just a carpenter, the shop fitter. But I realized in Australia that as a carpenter, you earn $27, $28 at the time. But as a shop fit, you earn $35 to $50. So I was like, right, I'll be a shop fitter then. So I get this job at Rabina Zara store there. It was a Zara store at Rabina at the time. And it was the first flagship Zara, I think, at the time in Australia. And I started working for them, and the Spanish architect saw what I was doing compared to Australian joiners, and he said, like, in broken Spanish English, he's like, this man, you take him everywhere to do all cabinetry around Australia, like, because he's good, he's fucking good, you know, he's very, very, you know, all this stuff, very articulate. And I was like, because I had real eye for detail. So that they came over to me and said to me, how much do you want to come around Australia with? And like, to me, $35 was a lot of money, bro. Like, a lot of money to me back then. And I was just thinking, fuck me. Like, so I was like, ah, you know, $55. And they snapped my arm off, because some of these other geezers were getting $75, $80. I didn't realize, right? So I got paid like $55 plus travel allowance, plus this, plus that. Anyway, so I then go traveling all around Australia. I've only been here like a month at this point. I go traveling all around Australia. I go fit out the store in Perth. I go fit out the store in Bondi Junction. I go and do a couple of Zaras in Melbourne. I go to all these different cities. I'm away for like 6, 8, 10 weeks. I come back. I've got like 30 grand in the bank. I've worked 12-hour days. I've been around miserable fuckers. It's because everyone in shop fitting is miserable, divorcing from their wife, hate life, etc., etc. So I come back, I've got this 30 grand in the bank now. I've never seen 30 grand in the bank in my entire life, like 30,000 Australian. And I took that money and I found that you needed to do this carpentry test called and this IELTS test for English. And I paid for those and everything I knew. I studied this visa system and I realized that there was a, not a loophole in the system, but there was a self-sponsorship 189 visa that you can apply for. So I literally studied this visa and realized I could do it myself. And I applied for that visa on Christmas Day 2014, and I was a permanent resident of Australia on the 23rd of February 2015. Like, wow. It was instant. Because they needed carpenters, and as soon as I got that visa, I did carpentry for a few more months, and then I used the money that I'd saved up by doing carpentry and shop fitting for a few more months and a few more tours to set my boxing gym up, called Frankie Knuckles Boxing Gym on the Gold Coast in Tedder, just off Tedder Avenue, and that was another pivotal point in my life, because I was earning $1,000 a week out of this boxing gym. It was I was doing my passion, but I wasn't earning no money essentially. And one day this guy rings me up. This was pivotal in my life, changed my life forever. And his name was James Gray, and he's still a good friend of mine, a mentor of mine now. He's done millions in marketing and all that stuff. And I was a one-to-one trainer, right, training people for boxing. And he came in my gym and he basically said, this is, came to me to lose weight. Whilst we're going through this process of helping him lose weight and me training him and me doing boxing, I didn't realize it at the time, but I was getting mentored. I was getting taught. I was actually learning more than probably what he was from losing the weight. He was teaching me about reading and what books I should read in, and how the route to success is you got to learn sales first and all this kind of stuff, this, that, and the other. Like, and he's asking me all these questions that were making me ask more of myself, getting me to read, getting me to visualize, getting me to meditate, getting me to do all this different stuff. And it changed my life forever, bro, because I realized that if I keep swapping my time for money as a boxing trainer, I cannot get to where I want to go. So this was where the pivot came into sales. Now, the first sales job I took, I flopped. I only did a few appointments, didn't sell much because I was in marketing. But the second sales role I got changed my life. I thought to myself, right, after I fell off in 1 week of this other sales job, I thought to myself, right, I need to level up my life. I need to smash this sales thing. So I downloaded a pirate copy of the Jordan Belfort straight line sales system. And I spent the whole weekend watching the straight line sales system and indoctrinating myself in it. I started this sales job on Monday. The whole team in this section was doing $45,000 a month in sales between about three of them, right? Inside the first month of that sales role, I'd done 165K revenue for that business. So it changed my life. And I was selling everybody. We were doing like a version of like reputation management at the time, and they were selling all these like small clients, and I was selling the big clients. I was selling like famous names in Australia and big businesses and all this kind of stuff, and I was selling it, and I just dialed it in, and that was another thing then that along my journey that changed my life, because now I've just opened up the door to abundance. Because when you can sell, you can absolutely change your life. Uncapped. And that's kind of my journey to that point, mate.
Wow. And then that brings you to what, like 2018 sort of vibe, 2017. And then I want to hear about once you start doing well in podcasting, because then content removal comes about. How'd you see the gap in the market with that? And that's,
I was speaking to a client on a sales call, with this company. And they said to me on the phone, the words said to me was like, Frankie, we're paying all this money to push it down. Wouldn't it just be easy to remove it? And I said, what do you mean? And they said, well, content removal. And I went, what do you mean content removal? And they're like, well, can't you just remove the online content? And I was like, oh yeah. So I go on to GoDaddy. I type in content removal. Contentremoval.com comes up there. It's $500. I'm like, I'm buying that. So I buy this domain name. I didn't realize at the time, but contentremoval.com was aged, a 12-year-aged domain. It was like one of the originals, right? It'd been pre-aged. So it already had websites on it doing similar things, but it fell out of laps and dilapidated. So I picked it up. I put it in my pocket. For context, I didn't have a contract while I was selling for this company. So they obviously want me to sign a contract. And I'm like, well, if you want me to sign a contract, because I'm such a good salesman compared to all these other people that you've got in this office, I realized, because I've been reading, I realized about equity and I wanted equity in the business. Now, I asked for 5% equity in that business to lead the sales for the whole organization and to train the salespeople as well in my spare time to make sure that they were doing what I was doing so we could all make more money, right? But they came back and they offered me like 0.5%, 1%. And I was like, nah, fuck this. I reckon I can earn more than that myself on my own, doing my own thing. I didn't have a plan for contentremoval.com when I left. So I just leave, right? I leave. And I go and sit. I've got cash in the bank. So I'm like, I'm just going to sit on the beach and think. So I'm sat on the beach thinking, and I get this phone call. And this phone call is from one of my previous people, one of the previous big celebrities teams in Australia, talking to me about reputation stuff. And I just said to him, they said to me, oh, we want to go ahead with some reputation stuff. I said, have you ever thought about removing the content? And they said to me, what do you mean? I said, well, I've got this thing where we can now remove content for people like you. And basically, instead of pushing it down, we solve the issue now. So I tell them about this concept that I've got for content removal in my head. And they're like, well, that sounds interesting. I said, I'll tell you what, send me 10 links. I said, send me 10 links. And to look at. So they send me these 10 links to look at. I thought, fuck this, I'm running it. So I thought, I sent them back a proposal that said, hey, client name, this is what you're facing. You're also facing a lot more beyond this. The way that we work is monthly retainers with this. It's $11,500 a month, monthly retainer. What we'll do is, once we'll remove five for you, and once we remove five of these 11, that'll unlock the 11,000 a month contract, right? So, and bearing in mind, Cooper, I didn't know how to remove content, bro. Like, so I have no idea. They've come back to me and gone, yeah, we'll run that. I'm gone, fuck. So there I am, bro. I'm sat there and I'm like just fucking trying to figure out how to remove images, how to remove everything. Anyway, bro. After about 4 weeks, I've removed five of these things.
How it do you remove over. Something like from the internet?
Mate, that's a totally new podcast. But anyway, I removed five of these things for this thing, and it unlocks me this contract, and I send this invoice, bro, and I in one client, I got $132,000 of revenue from a thought that I had on my head in the beach. On the beach, I'm like, holy fuck, I'm running this up, right? So then I go and sign other clients related to in similar niches, fashion models on the Gold Coast, and this, that, and the other. And I start looking after all of them, and I start looking after them for like about anywhere between 80 to 100 grand a pop, and they start signing deals with me. And inside, I'd say 2 months, I had like probably like $500,000 worth of money in the business. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, it was a crazy time, 2017, because I took myself from literally like broke on the beach with a bag of clothes to boxing gym owner to out the boxing gym doing one-to-ones to sales to life-changing. And that was it, light bulb, mate. And then I just ran it. But what happened was I ran content removal and ran it and ran it and ran it, just searching for money for years and years and years, bro, years and years. And then I got back to England. I thought my time in Australia was coming to an end in 2019. So I come back to the UK in June 2019. And from June to September 2019, I spent English summer here. And I was getting to the end of my time, because you asked me about the podcast. I was getting to the end of my time and I thought to myself, hang on a minute, I'm earning this money online. I'm kind of doing this, I'm doing that. I'm doing things that people say I'm passionate about. Well, not passionate about, but I'm not doing anything I'm passionate about. I'm not speaking into the world in the way that I feel I can speak into the world. Mm. So out of frustration, bro, I take my laptop down to the spare room. I've had this podcast idea in my head forever, and no mic, no nothing. I just recorded my 2020 vision, bro. Spoke it in. You can still listen to it now. It's on the Frankie Lee podcast if you want to listen to it. And I just spoke it, and then I recorded it and I put it out on the Anchor app, and I left it, bro. I just left it. And then I went back to Australia because I had to fly back to get my they were going to present me with my like a citizenship ceremony on the Valentine's Day 2020 is when they presented me with this citizenship in Australia, which was a beautiful moment for me. So I had to fly back to Australia to get that. I flew back, got that. We get locked down then in March. Now I'm stuck. And then that's when I'm like, fuck this, let's go with the podcast. Everyone's stuck in one location. Everyone's stuck in the Gold Coast. And I just ran it up from there. It was a fucking mental thing. But before that, I went to a clairvoyant, right, when I got back in Australia. And she said to me, you're going to meet someone from Hollywood on your journey, and once you've met him, you'll find your voice, and when you find your voice, you'll do what you do. And she didn't know about the podcast or anything like this, and I was not thinking about the podcast. But I go to my mates in Mermaid Beach. We go for a walk, me and my mate Aaron. We go start walking on the beach, and we look left and we look right, and we look left and we look down the beach, and there's this surf competition going on. Like, you know, all the grommets are out there doing the lifeboarding, whatever you call it, surf life saving, all that stuff, right? And then we look right, and we're looking at the beach, and my mate goes, "That's Tom Hanks." And I went, "You what? What are you talking about?" He goes, "Bro, that is Tom Hanks. I'm telling you, that's Tom Hanks." And he looks at me and he goes to me with a definite purpose in his eyes, and he said to me, "That's Tom Hanks. And if me and you don't go to talk to Tom Hanks now, we're never going to get the chance to talk to Tom Hanks, right? Do you know what I mean? Like, this is never happening. We ain't going to meet Tom Hanks again. So let's just circle round. If I'm right in what I'm saying, that's Tom Hanks. We'll talk to him." So we do this loop round. We walk towards him as he's walking past, and it's Tom Hanks with a security guard. And then we circle back, and my mate goes to me like, "It's now or never, mate. If you know." We've got to meet Tom Hanks if we've got the opportunity to." I'm like, fuck it. So we go and we start talking to Tom Hanks, his security. They're real nice people. We go on this 20-minute walk with Tom Hanks. He's telling me all this stuff about, and that was the trigger that I needed to spark this he's like, he said to me, what do you want to do? And I went, oh, you know, I want to start this podcast. He says, well, have you started it? I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, why aren't you doing it? Because he says, why are you feeling like that kind of lack in your life? Get on with it. Start speaking. That's how you, do you think I started doing films by not acting? Like, come on, like, just start doing it. And that was the voice that she was talking about that kickstarted the podcast. So it's like it all came round serendipitous. Like this clairvoyant tells me this thing. Next thing you know,
it's amazing. There's no coincidences in life, is there?
It was not. But she actually said to me, as well that my face would go to millions of people. But what I didn't understand at that time was that Tom Hanks would get COVID a couple of weeks later. And my image of me and him and Aaron on the beach was used on all the news articles around the world at the time. No. And it was on the TV. It was all over Australia and everything else. So like what I thought she meant something else and it meant something else. So that you can get this guidance in life, but sometimes it doesn't mean what you think it's going to mean. But that was the journey, mate, and kind of like there's a few other bits in between that, but you know,
we'll have to catch up for another chat. I mean, in fact, we could talk for ages, I'm sure. Yeah, I just feel like your story is just so interesting. The content removal idea is just like so genius, like having clients and retainers who need stuff taken down, and like you said, adding value. It's going to cost them more to have to squash a story for hundreds of thousands of dollars. I may as well pay someone to get rid of it. What a great business idea. And then like the podcast and the clairvoyant, you got such great stories. I love it so much,
mate. It's just a case of like you life presents you with these circumstances, and I want everyone to understand this, right? Because obviously this is a bit about me telling my story, but I want you guys to leave this with some value. It's like your story is so uniquely different. No one will be able to conceptualize what you've been through as a listener to this podcast and everything else. Like no one's. So just write every day as if it's your last day. Just this content removal thing that I ended up doing and making millions of dollars out over the years, that just can't. I was sat on a fucking beach just like looking at the fucking sea and someone rings me up on a random fucking Tuesday when I'm meant to be somewhere else. And my whole life just changed. Do you know what I'm saying? And that client stayed with me for like 6 years of business. We're friends now, you know, it all goes on. And like, there's so many other things that I could tell you, like that just serendipitously work and you kind of meet people and,
mate, it's been so cool. I guess I'll finish with, what are you up to now? I know, I mean, like I said, we could probably do another podcast. Hopefully we can do another one. Maybe when you're back in Oz, we can catch up in person. I'm sure we can have a good old yarn. But I just want to catch up to what you're doing now, because I just listened to your 2024 goals on your podcast that you put out the other day. And the big focus this year is to try and teach more people how to unlock that kind of full potential, which you seem to have found for yourself, but are continuing to strive for. So I guess this is just a bit of a chance to, before we wrap up, to let people know what you're up to now. And if you want to point anyone towards the stuff that you're doing now or any of the new podcast stuff.
So the podcast is my apex predator, because it allows me to get in the most ears and effectively change people's lives. I have a why statement for my podcast before I even started it. It's to help people break patterns and flip perspectives in their life so they can have more clarity, more focus, and more success in what they're meant to be doing. Right. So there's an inherent why behind everything I do, and I'm trying to transform you through my journey, through other people's journeys, through people like Kayla Edsines, through people like, you know, Mitch Third, through people like, you know, people that own massive companies like Gymshark, Grenade, all these companies too. So that's all on there. That's all on the Frankie Lee podcast. That's all free to go and listen to. And I want you to consume it. And I want you to move forward the same way that you're moving forward with the Good Human stuff. It's epic. That's what I'm kind of here for. But in order, what I realized this year and what you're talking about, Cooper, for me is like, I realized that the boxing coaching and working at world title level and all that stuff that we didn't touch upon, like that stuff was all good, but I realized my ladder was leant against the wrong wall when I was coaching that. And that when I was a coach for boxing, I was doing it to prove other people wrong. But then how it came back round to circle and finish this podcast is I realized the other day that with the journeys that I've been on and with this certain amount of success that I've had and the ups, the downs and the punches that I've taken and having spoken to so many elite fighters at top level and had to get in their mind at the most pivotal moments in their careers, I realize I have the ability to change people's minds like that. And I thought, I have to step back into being a coach. I have to step back into working with people one-to-one. And eventually I'll do groups and stuff. And eventually I want to step on stage like you and talk to thousands of people. I haven't quite got there yet. I've only done it once. But, you know, that's kind of my vision. So this year is all about stepping into the coaching stuff, working with people one-to-one, adding value to their lives. Let them tell me what they think they're struggling with, and then me removing all the bullshit around why you think you're struggling, and actually get into the true art of moving you forward. And that's my second focus. And then my overall goal is just to have the top education podcast in the world that makes people move and operate in a whole different spectrum of reality, because that's all I want for every single one of you, just to find what you're meant to be doing and do that, not to fuck around with all the other shit in between.
Mate, it's such a beautiful purpose that you seem to be living in life, and you've got such good validation to be actually teaching that stuff. There's so many coaches in our days that haven't created that multi-million dollar business, that haven't got that super successful podcast. You've actually got the runs on the board. You've gone through the journey, and everyone listening to this podcast has learnt a lot of the journey. I'm sure there's still plenty more to learn along the way, but you've got the runs on the board. You've had the big ideas, you've had the success, and you've got such a variety of different skills that I'm sure anyone who works with you is going to learn a lot. And anyone who listens to your podcast, like myself, learned so much. And I know from the few lessons you did get to share along your journey today, you have such a unique way of telling stories for people to actually get a lot of value out of it and to bring that shift in perspective. So I've got a lot out of today. I've got a lot out of a lot of your content. So I thank you for that. But I do finish all of my podcasts with the same question for everyone. And I'm really excited to hear your answer for this. So what does being a good human mean to Frankie Lee?
Being a good human means to me that you've got to turn up as you owe the world to turn up as the best version of yourself as soon as possible. So if you got to ask yourself, are you doing that? And if you're not, you got to start doing it. There's been times along this journey in my life and many other times that I haven't turned up as the best version of myself. Mm. And that's not really delivering my value to the world. It's not really helping people move forward. And if you want to have any impact on the world or any touch the world in any way, you've got to turn up as the best version of yourself. You know what I mean? And being a good human is first looking at how you're presenting yourself to the world, because it's never about what's happening externally. It's always about the internal conversation that you have to manage. And if you can manage the internal conversation, you can manage your external reality.
I love that, mate. Very well put, and a beautiful way to finish this podcast. So I'll leave in the show notes for everyone listening your podcast, your content removal website, your social media stuff as well, which I'm sure you know just as much as me. But yeah, if you enjoy the episode, anyone listening right now, please tag both myself and Frankie Lee on Instagram. Would love to know what you think of the episode. Leave us some of those interacts on Spotify, reviews on Apple and all that good stuff. But yeah, thank you so much for jumping on Good Humans, my man.
And just let me finish with one thing as well, because I know this podcast game inside out like you, but I just want to say to all of you that listen to Cooper's podcast, like he's out here doing the reps the same as me, right? The least you can do if you get value out of one of his episodes is to share it on social media, to tag him in it, to put him out there to more people. I think when you see a man here that's swinging the bat in life, trying to hit the ball, just and he's offering you value in life, I just think that, you know, reciprocate that value and put it and share it with the world, share it with other people, share it in WhatsApp groups, share it with the group of the girls, like just help this man like he's trying to help you, because I think that's where you will get more abundance in your life by showing gratitude for the work that he's doing for you.
Mate, I really appreciate that. It's so well put. I'm sure we'll get plenty of shares because of that. But anyway, thanks so much for jumping on Good Humans podcast.
Much love.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.